You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Good morning, Ms. Pistenis.
Good morning.
Ms. Pistenis, the prosecuting attorney brought up the topic of the seven gatherers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That has a unique context in that it talks about seven people. Is that right?
Yes.
And the seven people that were members of the seven gatherers would have been who, ma'am?
Nicole, Christina, Serena, Gibb, Melanie Pulaski, Laurie, and I.
So was this an organization that you ladies had organized to talk about religious topics?
It was a group to share information with, and also we were together in Zoom meetings doing castings.
Okay. And when you talk about these seven gatherers, and you say that it was, again, it was Melanie Gibb, is that right?
Yes.
And it was Melanie Boudreau, a.k.a. Pulaski, correct?
Correct.
Someone named Serena?
Correct.
Was April Raymond part of that?
No.
Okay. Nicole?
Yes.
Christina?
Yes.
Okay. And what it was is you shared a common website of some kind or a way to communicate with each other?
An email address.
Okay. And you all use that as a means of communicating with each other. Is that correct?
Sending information to each other.
And that information included information about various articles and periodicals that talked about various subjects. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. And there is no doubt that all of you knew about this organization called the Seven Gatherers. Is that right?
Yes.
You were all very familiar with the word the Seven Gatherers, correct?
Yes.
There's no confusion about that. So if I were to go to Melanie Gibb and ask her...
Your Honor, argumentative, asked and answered.
Sustained.
Did you talk to Melanie Gibb about this topic of the Seven Gatherers?
No, not necessarily.
Did you communicate with her through email about the organization that you put together called the Seven Gatherers?
Objection, Your Honor, misstates testimony.
Sustained.
In what manner would you communicate with Melanie and the others about this group called the Seven Gatherers?
I don't think that I could call it a way of communication with each other. One of the girls made a email address and said that we could send things to each other through that email. And there was a couple of emails that went back and forth in that email address, but it wasn't something that was discussed or that we had made it into an entity or anything like that. It was just an email address that was formed and a couple of people sent a couple of emails there.
And do you know who formed that Seven Gatherers email?
I believe it was Christina, but I am not 100% sure.
And could you tell me, how did you go about signing up as someone who was willing to receive and send out all of this information about the Seven Gatherers?
Could you explain your question to me?
Sure. I'll ask it again. How did you come about signing up as someone who would receive emails or correspondence with this Seven Gatherers?
The email address and the password was shared within the all of the girls.
How was that done? Did you folks talk about it, or was it just something that you just agreed we're gonna put this together and communicate?
The person that put it together gave the name of the email address and then gave the password to everyone.
And did you have an occasion to contribute articles to the Seven Gatherers email?
I don't remember. I don't recall if I did or not.
Did Melanie Gibb, do you recall ever getting anything from Melanie Gibb saying that she contributed articles or correspondence to the Seven Gatherers?
It is possible, but I don't recall.
You don't have any memory of that, is that right?
No.
Okay. Do you have any memory of anybody ever sending any articles to the Seven Gatherers?
I know that there was a couple of articles that were sent in there, but I don't remember who sent them or what they were about.
And again, those articles that were put in there would have been shared with all of the ladies who were, is members the right term when I'm describing the people who were listed as receiving emails and the seven gatherers. Would that be the correct term, members?
I would say that they were the people who had access to the email address.
Okay. So you wouldn't call them members?
Not necessarily. Okay. It wasn't like it was a club. It was just an email address that was shared within all of us.
For purposes of the seven, you to discuss religious topics, correct?
To send information on religious topics.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as we mentioned Melanie Gibb, when did you first meet Melanie Gibb?
When I moved to a house that was very near where Gibb used to live. And then I started attending the same ward that she attended.
And when was that?
I believe it was 2017.
Did at that point you develop a relationship with Ms. Gibb?
Not at the beginning. I knew her from church and I had said hello to her a couple of times, but we had not become friends.
So prior to the St. George gathering or meeting that all of you went to, how long had you known Melanie Gibb?
I'm going to say approximately a year.
And were you aware of some of the classes or teachings that Melanie Gibb participated in?
She invited me to one of her meetings that she was having at her house.
And when was that?
I want to say that it was probably around September of 2018.
And that was prior to you knowing Lori Vallow and knowing Chad Daybell, is that right?
Actually, at that meeting was when I met Lori.
Well, you jumped me on that a little bit, but that was the next question. You met Lori at this September meeting for the first time, correct?
Correct.
And the purpose of this meeting that Melanie Gibb had put together was for what?
It was so that Lori was going to speak at that meeting and that she was going to share her testimony.
Okay. And her testimony about what?
During this meeting, she related that she was having visitations from angels. She had visitations from the angel Moroni. And she also said that she was a personal witness of Jesus Christ, which meant that she had actually had a personal, physical meeting with Jesus Christ.
Okay. And that was prior to her ever meeting Chad Daybell, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then did Melanie Gibb offer any testimony at that meeting that Melanie organized?
I don't recall.
Okay. And then subsequent, now you had met Chad Daybell in Mesa at some point prior to the November St. George meeting, is that correct?
Correct.
Was that just a meeting or did you have a conversation with him?
It was a conference in Mesa, and Chad was speaking. I came to see the conference, and afterwards, I spoke to him very briefly while I was buying a couple of his books.
Okay. So these conferences were opportunities for people who have certain knowledge about religious topics to offer their opinions about religious topics. Would that be fair?
Yes.
And Chad Daybell was one of those, and you're aware he's an author, correct?
Yes.
You bought a couple of his books at the Mesa conference, right?
Yes.
And how many speakers? Do you recall how many speakers were at this Mesa conference?
I don't remember exactly, but I know that there was at least three or four speakers.
And the theme of that conference in November of 2018 would have been of what topic?
It was a Preparing a People conference, and usually at these conferences, they had topics such as how to prepare for emergencies and to prepare for the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Okay, so it's a topic of a religious nature, that would be fair, correct?
Yes.
And are there other topics? Are there topics about energy work that are conducted at these conferences?
No.
Okay. So it's all the speakers that are there are talking about the second coming and how to prepare for the second coming and steps you can take as part of that preparation. Would that be fair?
Yes. There was steps on what to do to be prepared physically and spiritually. And one of the things that Chad was speaking about was Chad spoke about having a couple of near-death experiences. And he said that after those near-death experiences, he practically didn't have a veil, which meant that he could actually see to the spirit world and speak with spirits. And that he had said that he had information about places of safety for when things were going to get really bad right before the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you were, at some point, you had had some difficulty and you were concerned about, based on your skills and past experience, being able to find employment in the Rexburg area. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And your skill and experiences in what?
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
Overruled.
Your skills and experiences in what?
In all of the jobs that I've had before. Do you want to know what I've done before my job?
Yes, if you would mind.
I've worked in corporate America in a insurance company as a manager of services department. I have worked as a instructional assistant in grade school, and I currently work for vocational rehabilitation.
So you consider yourself a reasonably educated person?
Yes.
And you consider yourself someone who has the ability to teach other people about various topics. Would that be fair?
I wouldn't consider myself a person that can teach others. I know how to train people with disabilities.
Okay. What about the ability to judge people's character and matters such as that?
I believe that I have been an overly trusting person.
Okay. And when you say that you were overly trusting, you're saying that this, all of this discussion about religion somehow tricked you into following a certain path. Would that be fair?
Objection, Your Honor, misstates testimony and counsel's testimony.
Sustained.
Okay. Is it your suggestion that in somehow Chad and Lori tricked you into believing all of this religious, all of these religious beliefs?
I trusted them and I believed them.
Okay. Now, as part of your cooperation in this case, were you provided any guarantees of immunity regarding any of your testimony?
Yes.
And you were granted an immunity agreement from being prosecuted for anything you may provide to the police. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And do you recall the number of times you've spoken to law enforcement about this case?
No, I don't remember how many times.
Are you aware that on at least four occasions you talked to the Rexburg police in your home area of Arizona? Do you recall that?
Yes, I have spoken to law enforcement several times.
You remember which law enforcement officer you spoke to particularly?
I've spoken to many.
Okay. There was also some mention about Lori and you said Gibb started a podcast at some point in the beginning stages of you meeting them. Is that right?
Yes.
And which one of those, do you recall which one of those started the podcast?
No.
Okay. And do you know what the subject of the podcast would have been?
I know that they had some guests on their podcast, and usually it was about spiritual things.
Okay. And that was prior, that podcast was prior to meeting Chad Daybill, is that correct?
I don't remember exactly when it was, but I know it was after Lori met Chad Daybill in St. George.
Okay. And at the time of the meeting between Lori and Chad at St. George, Chad was there to speak and sell books. Is that what you recall?
In St. George?
Yes.
Yes, he was there to speak and to sell books.
And if I understood your testimony prior to this, you indicated that, and I don't want to mischaracterize, that Lori was pursuing Chad at that point?
She was very flirtatious towards him.
Okay. Would you say that she was the aggressor in that situation when you observed it?
Yes.
Okay. And she was trying to impress him.
She was flirting with him.
Okay. You talked about a situation with a basketball game that Lori Valla was shooting or involved in a basketball court or something at one of the homes. Do you recall talking about that?
Yes.
Okay. And was that at Lori's home?
Yes.
And Chad was invited there to be a speaker for that particular weekend?
Yes, he came down for the Preparing a People conference, and this was after the conference at Lori's house.
And how many people were staying at Lori's house at that particular conference?
Several.
Several meaning how many?
Probably about four or five people.
And at that point, there was no indication that there was any romantic interest between them. Is that correct?
It didn't appear to be.
Okay. Did it appear to you at the basketball that Lori was being flirtatious again when she was talking to Chad about playing basketball?
Yes.
And initially, Chad chose to walk off with you. Is that what you recall?
Yes.
And Lori asked him, and please, if I misquote this, please correct me. Are you scared of me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she said to him? Is that what you heard?
Yes.
Did you understand what she meant by that?
What it meant to me was that she was asking him if he was scared of being alone with her.
Okay. Did you hear Chad respond?
He didn't respond.
Did he walk away?
He did.
Okay. So from that, did you gather that he wasn't interested, or did you come to some other conclusion?
My conclusion was that he was playing it safe.
Okay. So at that point, again, you would come to the, would it be fair for you to come to the conclusion that he was not engaging in this one-sided flirtatious?
Objection, Your Honor. Misstates the testimony. Move to strike.
Sustained.
Did you gather from that Lori was being flirtatious and that Chad was not receptive to that flirtatious offer?
At that time, yes.
Okay. Now, there was some discussion again about blessings. And blessings, and I guess I didn't ask this, but the religious matters that you spoke about are part of your LDS faith. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And as part of your LDS faith, blessings are not something particularly unusual, correct?
No, they're not.
In fact, it's not uncommon for people to offer blessings to each other as day-to-day life in your LDS faith. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. You talked about light and dark.
Yes.
Is it your understanding that that anybody can have the ability to determine whether someone's light or dark?
No.
So so you believe that it's just Chad Daybell who can determine whether someone's light or dark. Is that right?
I couldn't say that it is me, the one that has determined that is Chad, only the one that can do that. It was because Chad was the one that said that he had access to his portal, and through his portal, he was getting information from the spirit world about things such as light and dark and people.
So when, based on that answer, then it would not be an ordinary power to be able to determine whether someone was light or dark, correct?
No. It wouldn't be an ordinary thing to do.
Okay. And in terms of powers and roles, you talked about Alex Cox having the power as the warrior or the protector. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Did you, or were you advised that you had any special, or do you believe you have any specific power or ability?
Objection, Your Honor. Compound question.
Sustained.
Do you believe you have any special gift?
No.
You don't believe that you can predict the weather?
No.
Have you ever been advised or told that you could predict the weather?
Yes.
And who told you that?
Chad and Lori.
Okay. And did you believe them when they told you that you had the ability to predict the weather?
I was open to the idea.
Okay. Did you ever try to exercise that power of your ability to predict the weather?
Yes, because Chad told me to practice.
Okay. And who did you practice on?
I don't understand your question.
Well, yeah, Chad, you said Chad claimed to have told you to practice predict your gift of predicting the weather. I'm just curious as to how you practiced your gift of predicting the weather.
I would just do imagine in my mind.
Okay. Were you ever successful in predicting the weather?
I don't believe so.
Judge, I have a, well, before I get there, your testimony is that as part of the castings, that if it was unsuccessful, that the body would die or there would be a killing of the body. Is that what you testified to?
Objection, Your Honor, misstates the testimony.
Oral.
Again, the question is that as part of the castings, if the casting was not successful, would the body die or was there a killing of the body as a result of the unsuccessful casting?
Can you ask me one question at a time? Because you asked me two questions.
Okay. As part of the castings, if it was unsuccessful, would it result in the killing of the body?
It was unsuccessful. That would mean that the demon was still in the body. So Nothing would happen.
Okay. And if the casting was successful and you were able to extract the demon from the body, what would happen to the body?
The body would die.
Okay. And is that something that Chad and Lori taught you?
Yes.
Okay. In essence, would it mean then that if they were successful in extracting a demon from the body, that in essence, they'd be killing the human body? Would that be fair?
I wouldn't be using the term killing, but it would mean that the body would die.
Was there any indication in any of the correspondence between you and Lori and Chad about killing anybody?
No.
You never discussed the topic of killing anybody, is that correct?
No.
And in fact, you never discussed the topic of casting and how it would, how the ultimate end would be the death of the body. Isn't that true?
They were teaching that once if the casting was successful, then the demon would be cast out. Therefore, the body could actually die and expire.
And Judge, I have Exhibit 88, and I'd like to play a portion of the exhibit for Ms. Pistenez so she can identify that. And then at subsequent, I would ask that be exhibit be marked and accepted as Defense Exhibit 88.
All right, the defense has proffered an exhibit. You can just publish briefly, sufficient to lay some foundation.
And Your Honor, may we approach on this?
Yeah. All right, we discussed in a sidebar there this proposed exhibit. I do have some additional argument from counsel potentially on this and also with foundation. I think it's more appropriate to take that up outside presence of the jurors. So given the time, what we're going to do is start our lunch recess at this time. Because this may take a few moments, we will plan on taking the lunch hour and resume with more testimony right around 1 o'clock or perhaps just slightly before 1 o'clock. So we'll take the lunch recess. For those in the public attending, if you'd like to step out, you may. If you wish to stay in while we take up the evidentiary matter, you can as well. We will have the jurors retire for lunch at this time, though.
All right, please.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. Okay, we are on the record on CR 22, 21, 16, 23. The court notes that the jurors have been excused to take lunch at this time. We are still in open court to discuss a proffered exhibit. The defense has indicated an intention to admit Exhibit 88. I believe the state may have an objection to the admission of the exhibit in its entirety. Court indicated I would permit outside the presence of the jury some foundation in the beginning to allow for defense to determine if the witness can identify for foundational purposes the exhibit. And then once we've gotten through that step, we can move on to whether or not the exhibit may be admitted and for what purpose or how much of the exhibit. So, Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to start with some publishing of the exhibit sufficient to establish foundation, we can do that at this time.
And Judge, I may have misspoke. It was Exhibit 83.
Okay, we had that as
apologize.
So this will be Exhibit 83. And can you describe what the exhibit is before
Judge,
we start?
This is an exhibit in which on October 2nd of 20, Officer Hermosillo and Officer Wright interviewed Ms. Pastenez. The length of the recording is 3 hours, 35 minutes, and 42 seconds. The section of the tape that I want to play for the court and Ms. Pastenez starts at 24:34, approximately goes to 25:38. And it talks about Ms. Pastenez making certain representations about the killing of the body.
All right. If you'd like to proffer by foundation playing part of that, I'll allow you to publish it since the jury's not here sufficient for the witness to identify.
And like Mr. Wood, I'm not getting any sound, Judge.
All right. See if you can't.
That being well, they have to kill your body to get that demon out. Is that how you understood it?
Now, Ms. Pastenez, you had an opportunity to review that. Do you recognize the female that's in that video?
Yes.
And who is that?
That's me.
Okay. And then the person to your immediate left, who would that be?
That's my attorney, Garrett Smith.
And then the person across the desk from you would be who?
I believe that's Detective Hermosillo. I can't see him very well. I can't see him, very well.
And that would be from the Rexburg Police Department?
Yes.
Do you have a recollection of who the person is? To your right at the end of the table?
I believe that he was an FBI agent.
Okay. And if I were to present to you that it could be someone by the name of Ricky Wright, would that make you recall any better? Okay. And ma'am, does this appear to be a true and accurate picture of the meeting on 10-20 of 20 or 10-2 of 20 regarding the interview between you and Officer Hermosillo?
Yes.
Okay, Judge, I move for admission. Defense Exhibit 83.
All right. And you're moving to admit the 3 hours and 35 minutes of the interview?
There is, Judge. And the reason for that is that there were a number of representations that I could be here for a week if I wanted to, going over with Ms. Pastenez. But quite frankly, after today's testimony, it will be my intent to probably call her back and go back over a number of those. But for purposes of today, I'm just going to ask for a small portion of that be published to the jury relating to the killing of bodies after a casting.
All right. What's the response from the state on the proposal to admit exhibit number 83?
Your Honor, the state would object. The state would object on under Rule 403, cumulative waste of time, just confuse the jury. In addition, under Rule 613, which I think is what the defense had indicated the intention was to admit, there has to be more than just an admission of it. There has to be extrinsic evidence, and then there has to be some kind of inconsistency, and the party has to be given a chance to explain that. None of that has been done at this point in time. There's been no questions asked about any inconsistent or perceived inconsistent statements, so I think it would be premature to admit it. I think admitting it in its entirety, when Ms. Pastenez is here, she's testified about a lot of the contents. It's simply cumulative. All so right. For those two reasons, we would object.
All right. Any further response, Mr. Pryor?
Judge, I'm allowed to go into impeachment. I questioned Ms. Pastenez about her beliefs, or at least what she felt were conveyed by Mr. Daybell and Ms. Vallow about castings and the ultimate result. In addition, Judge, the fact that she engages in an interview for 3 hours and 35 minutes and makes a number of representations that may be inconsistent with what she said today, by that very definition, allows me to bring in those statements and allows me to submit this this interview of Ms. Pastenez and Officer Hermosillo. So I'm baffled as to why the state is suggesting this isn't proper impeachment.
And Your Honor, all due respect, but Rule 613B lays out the specific process. Counsel has not followed the rule as laid out in 613B. If he were to follow that rule and there is still a reason or grounds for admission, the state would understand, but the rule simply hasn't been complied with.
All right. Well, I've considered the offered exhibit at this time. I'm not saying you can't impeach potentially with the exhibit, but to admit the entire exhibit, which is the full interview, I think does require under Rule 613B a process that at this point we're not at. So I think it would be premature to admit the exhibit looking at Idaho Rule of Evidence 613B. And for that reason, I'm going to deny the admission of it at this time. So with that ruling, then we'll go ahead and break for lunch and come back on. Mr. Pryor, if you want to review that further or discuss it again on the record in terms of how it may be used for impeachment, I'll consider that. But the admission of the entire exhibit is denied based on the objection of the state and the rule cited. So that'll conclude the ruling at this time. We'll go ahead and take the lunch recess and resume back at 1. If you want to make any further argument or proffer, I'm still open to that, Mr. Pryor.
Thank you, Judge.
That just before the jury comes in.
All rise.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, we're back on the record on CR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. We concluded the lunch recess. We are on the record outside the presence of the jurors who have not returned to the courtroom yet on the court's instruction to hold them while we continue to discuss this evidentiary issue related to proposed Exhibit 83. The court had a sidebar with counsel on the record discussing that it will permit the refreshing of the recollection of the witness to determine if there are any prior inconsistent statements that would implicate Rule 613. And so at this time, I'm going to allow you, Mr. Pryor, to publish those excerpts to the witness so she can listen to what was said in the interviews, and then we'll make a determination as to whether or not there are inconsistent statements that may bring into play Rule 613B and how those may be used if you believe impeachment's required. All right, Exhibit 83 then, and again, without the jury here, I'll allow you to publish the sections you think are relevant in terms of determining whether there's inconsistent statements. I'll have you turn your microphone on, please, Mr. Pryor.
Exhibit number 87 is an interview on 10-23 of 20 with Officer Chiacomano and Edwards of Ms. Pastenez as well. That's 87, and 88 would be a interview with Officer Hermosillo and Officer Chiacomano on 4-29-21 with Ms. Pastenez, and I'm going to have them marked as Exhibit 87 and 88 as well, Judge.
Are you intending to publish any part of those?
I'm going to publish. I will publish 3 excerpts on those respective exhibits, Judge.
Okay. When you do publish, just carefully identify which exhibit the excerpt is from, so we know that.
Your Honor, may I also inquire to get the time stamp on each publication?
Yeah. The best we can identify what is published, we'll need to have a record of that, since currently none of these exhibits are admitted.
Judge, on 83, we're going to start at about 24-12, Judge.
All right, you can publish to the witness.
And Judge, it's up on the HDMI, if I could have them.
That was never explained. I don't know. He never said that. I don't think that was ever put in as an option or asked as an option. Actually, that's the first time I ever even thought about that could be an option, that my spirit could actually come back to the body.
So
the possibility.
So did you believe it to be that once your spirit is in limbo and the demon is in your body, in order for that demon to get out, they have to kill your body to get that demon out? Is that how you understood it?
No, because it was... I understood the way that Chad explained it was that we would expel the demon out of the body, put a protection around the body so no other entity could come in. But they never spoke about killing the body. Do you see this? They only talked about expelling or throwing out or casting out the bad spirit. They never talked about actually killing the body.
Okay. So if you expel that evil spirit and you put a protection around the body, and the good spirit can't come back, what the body is basically going to die, right? The expelling of it is, it causes basically the death of the body, whether that's an intentional harm to the body or just the body just had a car accident and dies, or falls over from natural causes and dies. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Judge, that's a 2604.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And Judge, if I could have 87 and 88.
Yes, I'll have the bailiff deliver those.
Judge, we'll start at 1018. May I publish, Judge?
You may.
Which exhibit number is this?
This is 87.
Yeah, both are two. And with that, weekend that I told you that was really weird because they, you know, I had two rooms prepared for them. I had two rooms prepared for them to stay because my kids were out of town. And so it was just, it was me, the house, so I had prepared the rooms for them to stay at. And for Lori, so Serena was going to stay in my room, and I had a room ready for Lori and another room for Given, and I was going to take the couch. And then Lori and Give decided that they didn't want to be in separate rooms, they wanted to sleep together.
Really?
Your Honor, I'm going to actually object to this.
Do you think there was a physical relationship?
This hasn't even been discussed. So if this is going to be used for impeachment, this, where we're going with this, this information has not even come up in any testimony.
Well, I'll note, Mr. Pryor, in order to come in for impeachment, there first has to be relevance, and the relevance is a foundation for potential impeachment. If it's something that could not be a prior inconsistent statement, then it's not relevant under 403, and therefore it doesn't come in. So if this is a topic not yet discussed by the witness on the stand, then I would agree. There's no reason to continue publishing.
And Judge, the way I understood the inquiry is that the court was going to allow me to publish these statements, and then I can inquire of the witness. And this statement is not necessarily exclusive to just impeachment, Judge. This statement goes to bias and the relationship between Ms. Gibb and Ms. Vallow.
Yeah, this is a completely different topic. We're way out of the scope of what we're determining on this. And so I'm not going to permit 87 to be further published, sustaining the objection of the state. The narrow topic we're on right now, Mr. Pryor, is simply, are there inconsistent statements that have already been offered on the stand by the witness and whether or not they can be impeached?
So I assume then that the court in a later, later through Mrs. Pastenez's testimony, I'll be able to bring up the subject if there is some issue relating to the relationship between Ms. Gibb and Ms. Vallow. Is that correct, Judge?
Well, I'm not going to make a advisory ruling for you. What we've got right now is whether or not there's inconsistent statements that can be impeached, and that's the only ruling I'm going to make at this point.
Okay. Judge, could we have a sidebar, please?
We need to keep things moving here, Mr. Pryor, so no. We don't have the jury here, so let's get through this evidentiary matter and get them back in for further testimony as soon as possible.
And this is at 4646, Judge?
Of which exhibit?
87.
I don't know. I haven't looked at it before.
Okay. I'm just curious. Okay, the next one.
So, and I don't remember whether she was the one that saw this, or maybe I wrote from somewhere else, or maybe she said that. I don't remember this part, but the price that he thinks I want is a law, a formula, and a covenant. Maybe that's something that she said. I don't remember.
I'm sorry, Judge. I have the wrong
spot. We're
going to start at 4534, Judge.
Is it sanctified? Is that one? Yeah. Or solidified?
Sanctified.
Okay.
I'm missing the C there. I don't remember what that was.
No worries. Okay, moving on to 12. Give us the background on this page. Same.
So this one here is another phone call with the girl. Said, you know, she, I think it was Christina that had created this Gmail, Seven Gatherers at Gmail, so that we would all be able to like share documents and information with each other that with things that we were learning, so that we could communicate it with each other.
Okay.
Oh, that was that. That's an email address.
Did you guys use this quite a bit?
For a little bit, yeah.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The seven gatherers at Gmail, and then the seven lines 144, is that the password to get into it? Is that why you wrote that out? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you still have access to that?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it before.
Okay. I'm just curious. Okay, the next one.
And Judge, the last one under 88, given the court's ruling regarding 87, I'll reserve publishing 88 until after I've crossed the witness about some of the statements relating to that one. Okay.
Okay. So the one that was just published, was that off 87 or 83?
That was off 87. And Judge, I have that from 4552 to 4656. And that's the one about the discussion about the seven gatherers.
All right. So then those have been played. Those were just simply to refresh the recollection of the witness for potential and for reference of the court to see if there's an inconsistent statement with any previous testimony. As I mentioned before, the inquiry is under actually Rule 401 as to whether or not there's any relevance. And then if there's an inconsistent previous statement, that can be considered under Rule 613B. And the court has to have an inquiry first to determine the applicability of the rule. So, Mr. Pryor, what would you argue is an inconsistent statement that allows this to be used to impeach in front of a jury?
Well, Judge, she had mentioned, my recollection of my notes indicate that she said that it was used a few times on this Gmail account about the seven gatherers. And I believe her testimony with Officer Hermosillo and, Officer Hiakamanu and Officer Edwards was that it seems, I recall the words on the video saying frequently. So that seems to be inconsistent. And what I'm getting at is that this seven gatherers was used more frequently than what she had originally testified to.
All right. And on the first statement, was there anything else? Because we need to make our ruling on this too.
And Judge, in that situation, there was extensive discussion about killing the body and about killing. And although at the end she does say that the end result could be that the body dies, there was at least an insinuation that this process was designed to kill the body. And then her testimony, at least to the police officers, and that would be Officer Hermosillo and Officer Wright, is that there was never talk about killing the body.
All right. Does the state have any response before I make a ruling on essentially what we're doing here is proffering whether or not this exhibit, again, is admissible? What's the response from the state, Ms. Blake?
Your Honor, I think for it to be admissible, the witness would have to be questioned as well if it were determined to be inconsistent and see if she denies it or provides any additional input. However, before we even get to that point, the state's argument is these are not inconsistent at all. These are completely consistent with my recollection of Ms. Pestenis's testimony, down to that she thought Christina created that email account. She was open about the fact they use it to communicate and share documents. I don't think there was ever an indication that it was used very rarely. I think to the contrary, she said it was used. In relation to the first one, I think that corresponds completely with what she testified to previously. However, all that being said, at the end of the day, if these clips are going to be asked to be admitted, I don't think the state has an objection. However, we believe that they're completely consistent. So I don't know that they're admissible under for impeachment purposes.
Okay. Well, first, there's a practical issue of they're not really clips. They're excerpts out of a nearly four, at least the 183 is nearly a 4-hour interview, which is very problematic to admit the entire thing to the jury if we're only doing that for a limited purpose of potential impeachment. So I'm still not going to allow the admission of them. You can question and in aid of potential impeachment on that and ask the witness now that she's heard those excerpts. I'll note that under State versus Koch, K-O-C-H 157, Idaho 89, one of the things the court has to determine as to whether or not there's a prior inconsistent statement is the standard of, quote, whenever a reasonable person could infer on comparing the whole effect of the statements that have been produced by inconsistent beliefs. And I don't find that it's risen to the level to get to be a prior inconsistent statement under 613B. So I think the Well, the ruling will maintain that I'm not admitting the exhibit proposed. And at this point, we'll just have the jurors return. You can question on cross now that the witness has heard those statements, Mr. Pryor, to see if there's any more inquiry. But at this point, I don't think there's a 613B issue. And so the exhibits are not admitted.
And Judge, could I approach my desk again to pick up some additional documents?
Yes, you can do that. And then let's have the jurors brought in, please.
Okay. All right, please. Here's our President Jennifer Yard.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. All right, the jurors have returned. We're back on the record on case CR 22-21-16-23. I will indicate to the jurors, thank you for your patience. We took an extra long lunch recess working on some matters outside your presence. Given the time here where we're intending to stop at our usual time, we may consider going through without an afternoon break, but I'll check with the jurors to see where things stand and where we are with witnesses before making that determination. But that would probably be a good use of our time if we could just get through the afternoon with no more breaks. So if we're able to do that, we will. And Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to continue on your cross, you may do that at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Pastenez, we were on the subject earlier about castings. And is it your understanding that Chad and Lori never spoke of killing a body during a casting? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. However, it's also your understanding that if a casting is successful and the spirit leaves, it's your understanding that the body dies. Is that what you understand?
Correct.
So what I'm confused about is that you spoke earlier about Charles, and you were involved in one of the first castings with him. Is that right?
Yes.
And who was present for that casting?
The first time that there was casting done on Charles, it was Christina, Nicole, Serena, Gibb, Lori, and I.
So almost the entire seven gatherers.
Yes.
And was this a seven gatherer casting that was that you folks had organized?
I don't believe that the email address had been created yet.
Okay.
At that time.
Okay. And again, in terms of the seven gatherers, is it your testimony that Gmail originally, when that account was created, that you used that account regularly?
It was used for a little bit. I couldn't tell you how many times or for how many documents were shared in there. I know that it was used, but I can't exactly tell you how many numbers of documents were in there.
And not necessarily a number of documents is what I'm looking for, but rather a description of how often that was used. Would you say that it was used frequently?
Probably.
Okay. Thank you. Now, let's go back to the issue with the casting of Charles Vallow. And you mentioned that at least five or six of the seven gatherers were there engaging in that casting. Is that right?
Yes.
And one of those members of the seven gatherers was Melanie Gibb, correct?
Yes.
And was Melanie Gibb running that casting?
No.
Lori Vallow?
Yes.
Okay. And at the time, you had indicated that that casting was successful. Is that right?
When Lori called Chad to ask if it had been successful, she returned with saying that it had been successful.
And do you remember when that first casting was?
It was towards the end of March of 2019.
And at the successful completion of that casting, did you get notice that Charles Vallow died as a result of that successful casting?
So I think that the things that Chad and Lori were teaching was that the person had already died originally, and that there was a 2-minute window where an evil spirit could come into that spirit, into that body. So in actuality, what they were teaching was that the body was already dead And it was being occupied by a evil spirit. So I guess it would be more accurate to say that if a casting worked, then the body would finally die naturally.
So if a body would finally die naturally, then when the casting was successful, Charles Vallow didn't die though, did he?
Are you asking about the spirit or are you asking about the body?
I'm asking about the body.
The body. Okay, so the body would have been the body of Charles Vallow, but okay. It would have been occupied by an evil spirit.
Okay. All right. Then there was a second casting, correct?
Correct.
And at that point, and again, that was a successful casting of again a Charles Vallow's body again, correct?
According to Chad and Lori, yes.
Okay. And when you say according to Chad and Lori, isn't it true, ma'am, that almost all of the information you got was from Lori Vallow claiming Chad made a comment about a certain topic?
Correct.
And it wasn't really Chad who spoke to you about any of these things. It was Lori Vallow who was telling you about all of this casting and energy work, correct?
Not all of it. What came through her, some stuff came through Chad as well.
Okay, well, let me rephrase that then. The vast majority of the information you received was from Lori Vallow claiming to say what Chad Daybell told her. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you talked a little bit about the fact that Lori moved back into Texas with Charles. And when was that?
I don't have a specific date of that.
You don't
remember? Recollection. No.
Remember that? Okay.
Okay. I know it was in 2019, but I don't know when.
You were pretty specific about all of the questions when the prosecutor asked you questions about dates and times and comments.
Objection, Your Honor, argumentative, and the counsel's testifying move to strike.
Stain.
Isn't it true, ma'am, that you were quite specific about your testimony in responding to the prosecutor's
objection, question? Your Honor, argumentative.
Overruled.
Isn't it true, ma'am, that you were quite specific in your responses to the prosecutor about her questions?
Yes.
And yet, when I ask you about a question about Texas and Lori Vallow, you don't remember. Is that correct?
I don't remember the date, no.
Okay. Do you remember Lori moving to Hawaii in 2019?
Yes.
In early of 2019, February, do you recall that?
Yeah, it was around February, March, somewhere around there.
And do you recall the length of time that she was living in Hawaii during that time?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do you know whether or not JJ was with her during the time that she was in Hawaii for February and March?
To my knowledge, JJ was not with her.
To your knowledge, where was JJ?
With Charles.
Okay. And then subsequent to that stay in Hawaii, she then, I don't want to use the word reconcile, but got back together with Charles. Is that right?
Yes.
And at that point, she indicated that she was trying to clear up some financial issues.
Yes.
Did she go into detail that she was trying, did she ever mention to you that she was trying to convince Charles to make her the beneficiary of her life insurance again?
No.
But she did talk about financial issues, correct?
Yes. She just said that she needed to get her finances taken care of.
Okay. Now, you were present at the Mesa conference, correct? And ma'am, do you have a phone or something you're looking at?
No, I have my hands.
Okay. You were at the Mesa conference, is that correct?
Yes.
And then you were also at the St. George conference?
Yes.
Do you ever recall at both of those conferences if Chad talked about knowing that he had a vision about Tammy's, short life?
Not that I recall.
Okay. You spoke about portals. Do you remember the prosecutor talking to you about portals?
Yes.
Okay, and you mentioned that, and your comment was something to the effect, not in that context. Other than what Chad and Lori may have told you about portals, what is your knowledge of portals?
Not very much.
Okay, so prior to that time, you never learned anything or knew anything of portals?
No, not other than movies, but...
Okay. Okay. You mentioned that the first time, and I believe this is what you said, is the first time you heard the word zombies was from Melanie Gibb in February of 2019, is that correct?
Yes, from Melanie and Lori.
Okay, so they were the ones who first used the term zombies, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then Melanie also spoke to you, or excuse me, Lori also spoke to you about the fact that she was relying on the income from JJ and Tylee to support herself. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And there was some discussion about Melanie having enough money for all of us. That was Melanie Pulowski?
Yes.
That was not Melanie Gibb?
Correct.
And Judge, could I have Exhibit 54B and Exhibit 54?
Yes, we'll provide those to you.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.